Welcome to Moolala, Money Made Simple on SiriusXM. Here's your host, Bruce Sellery.
Hello, I'm Bruce Sellery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Questrade is consistently ranked as one of the top discount brokers in Canada. But at 17 years old, it's a grizzled old-timer compared to the freshly scrubbed robo-advisors coming onto the scene. There is wisdom, perhaps, that comes with experience. So we're going to talk to Edward Kulendenko, the CEO of Questrade, about the future of fintech. Then we'll look at the results of a new survey from the investment on the investment industry from CARP, the group that lobbies on behalf of retirees. I was kind of surprised by some of the findings, including how strongly CARP's members support the elimination of embedded fees. And get yourself a will already. More than half of Canadians haven't gotten around to it, which kind of freaks me out. Perhaps a do-it-yourself will is for you. We'll get you the details on the who, what, when, where, and how much. Plus, a new book called Your Money's Worth, The Essential Guide to Financial Advice for Canadians. It's an insider's look at the industry written for outsiders. Let's get started. Fintech is a pretty new buzzword, and while it tends to conjure up images of 22-year-old hoodie-wearing entrepreneurs, there are a number of Canadians who have been at this for decades. Edward Kulendenko is the CEO of Questrade, and he is our guest today. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
17 years. Do you feel like the senior statesman?
I feel like we're just a startup still.
You still like? Why do you feel like a startup, even though you've been around for 17 years? Do you have foosball and like funky snacks?
We do all kinds of funky stuff at Questrade, for sure. But we feel like a startup because we're constantly innovating. We're constantly pushing the envelope. We're constantly challenging ourselves and the industry to do better.
What has been the single biggest catalyst for your business in this time, in that 17-year time?
The focus on technology and how technology can really help Canadians deliver more value and utility to them, a much better experience than what they've been used to.
And there are people driving that technological push. Was there a particular innovation that made the biggest difference? Was it the smartphone in your hand and the appification in the world? What was it that had it work not just for you, but for competitors around the world?
Well, uniquely enough, when we started as an active trader firm, and we were locked into an office for 30 traders. And what really changed our business model was high-speed internet, believe it or not. And that
really?
Was back in the days when people that might be a little bit older than some of your audience.
Why are you looking at me like that? You're implying that I'm a little bit older. And remember the AOL commercials and that little sound thing when I boo-da-boo.
You read my mind. It's exactly where I was going.
I am old enough to know that. So high-speed internet was a big catalyst. I didn't know that. You started online trading, so people had to come into your office, and then they didn't have to come into your office anymore, and they could trade from wherever they were because they had high-speed internet at home. Now you offer robo-advisor services. What's the advantage to offering both?
Well, we love the opportunity to offer Canadians both self-directed and a professionally managed account. This is something that's really unique in the industry. We're the only ones, really, that are doing that.
Wouldn't TD beg to differ? Not TD. Wouldn't BMO beg to differ?
BMO has a similar product, but I was saying we're the only independent to do that.
Okay. That's an appropriate qualifier. Thinking of the big banks, Scotia has a digital factory. TD has a partnership with Communitech. The big banks seem to be waking up. How do you stay competitive, given that they're going to have more money than you will ever have in a million years?
Well, like I said, we keep constantly pushing the envelope. And what we pride ourselves on is delivering true value to our clients and a much better utility. So easy to use, easy to service, easy to understand, and easy to buy. And so all of these things combined really provides the value that we offer to clients. And we've been doing that since we really started. And if you take a look, we've been first in so many areas where everyone else has followed. When we first started in the business, we were the only ones back 17 years ago under $10 a trade.
Right.
When did everyone else? Everyone else was around $40, believe it or not, when we started.
$40. I believe it. I remember those days.
And today, just very recently, everyone's moved to that neighborhood. Well, we've moved even lower. We provided even more value. We're down at $4.95 a trade. In terms of the managed service, you know, it starts as low as 30 basis points.
You've been leading the drumbeat, or at least beating your drumsticks on the fee drum for a very long time. Yet market share for all of robos and all of discount brokers combined is still, in relative terms, quite low. Why is that?
Well, actually, it's the fastest growing segment.
But it remains relative to the industry, still relatively low. It's growing, but it's still relatively low.
So in terms of what people's awareness is, there is a smaller segment of the population that feels comfortable enough to manage their own finances. But by and large, most people either don't have the time or the desire to do that, to invest the time to manage their own finances on an active basis. And so what invariably happens is they walk into a mutual fund dealer, and they'll be sold the mutual funds. And we all know today that Canadians pay the highest mutual fund fees in the world for some reason that we don't understand. And so what we've done is we've managed Equestrade to provide a product that really deals with that issue, where Canadians can retire at least 30% wealthier. Mm.
I can tell you why Canadians pay higher fees. So if you don't understand that, I can explain it. It's quite simple. It is the price that the market will bear. Do you agree with my assessment?
Well,
it was a very thoughtful pause.
Yeah.
And my assertion is that with CRM2, increased competition, consumer awareness about the hit that the fees are, that they cost you in terms of performance, that will change over time. And I think we've seen it change over time. Some of the massive mutual funds in this country have taken their MERs down.
There's no reason why Canada should be behind China in terms of cost of mutual funds. There really should not be a reason for that, in my view. And I think part of it is because consumers are just not aware. It's not.
Yep.
It's not because they will bear the cost. They're not even aware of the cost. And what happens is years and years and years pass, and they look at their savings and they look, well, they haven't really grown all that much.
Yeah.
So where did it go? Went into fees.
Yeah. What are some of the big themes that you're watching for fintech broadly speaking?
Well, fintech is going to continue to push the envelope and convert processes which were done manually for hundreds of years. They're going to convert those processes into an online process where it's going to reduce the friction and increase the utility. And that's really what Questrade is all about. That's really how we've managed to be the fastest growing online broker in Canada and the largest independent.
How do you balance between desktop utility and mobile?
Mobile is certainly going to increase in its share of...
Do you design for mobile first?
Yes. That's exactly what we do now. We, with the new phones, with the smartphones that are much faster and much more capable of processing, it has become a much, much better experience for clients, especially some of them with the larger screens now. When the screens used to be very small, it used to be very difficult to provide all that information that you need for a platform to see. Now that the screens are much bigger, we certainly, that is a focus of Equestrade.
In a startup world, in the startup world, there's something called a liquidity event. You may have heard of something called a liquidity event. What's the end game for you? What's the end game for Equestrade?
That's not something that we go to bed and get up with.
Yeah. You almost seem like that was an inappropriate question. Why is that an inappropriate question?
Well, if we were looking for a liquidity event, it would have happened years and years ago.
And you wouldn't tell me on my radio show first?
We've been in it for 17 years, Bruce.
Yeah.
And so if this is what we're looking for, to do something very quickly, we would have done it way back when. And not that we didn't have the opportunity. We've been one of Canada's fastest. We've been the fastest growing online broker in Canada for years and years now. We're here really because we care about the financial security and we want to make Canadians much more financially successful and secure. This is why we're here. This is what we've set out to do. And we're going to continue to do that. And we're going to continue to challenge the industry and push the envelope.
Edward, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Edward Kolodenko is the CEO of Questrade.
Listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
There are many, many factors that affect the quality of life for retirees. Some retirees themselves can control, but other factors like government pensions, tax rules, and investment industry regulation are in the hands of politicians. Today, we talked to one of the people trying to influence policy at the national level. Juana Morris is the Vice President of Advocacy for CARP, formerly known as the Canadian Association of Retired Persons. She joins us us from Surrey, BC. Hello there.
Hi there.
What is the number one thing people should know about carp, the new carp, the contemporary carp?
We are the primary voice for individuals 55 and over. And when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to financial security, and when it comes to speaking out against ageism, we are that group.
You did a bunch of research of your members on the investment industry, and there were a couple of interesting findings, at least for me. 79% support the elimination of embedded fees, including 40% who are in strong support of that. I was surprised by this result because I would have thought that many seniors would have been more concerned about the risk of less access to financial advice. What did you infer from that number yourself?
You know, I think the results of the poll in general were striking in how strong the majorities were. You know, it wasn't just that people wanted us to do this. They really want us to step in and advocate in the area of investor protection. You know, in terms of embedded fees, it's an interesting question because we know that when those fees go down, or, you know, when embedded fees are eliminated, that the actual cost of advice can go up. But what happens is the overall cost to the investors frequently goes down because people are paying a little bit more for advice, but they're getting far less expensive products. So their total investment cost goes down, and I think they're far better served as well.
89% of CARP members polled support a best interest standard. What would be different from today if that best interest standard were introduced? Because when you read more about it, you think, I thought everybody already did this stuff, but they don't.
And Bruce, you really put your finger on a big part of the problem is that so many of our members assume that they are being treated as if their advisors were subject to a best interest standard. So the deal is that right now, any investment advisor has to meet a suitability standard. So they are required to provide recommendations for investment products that are suitable to their clients. But the thing is, you can have a range of suitable products that pay very, very different fees to advisors. So, for example, an index fund that pays a 0.25% return and a mutual fund that pays a 2.5% commission. Those have those could be equally suitable. Now, it's obviously in the client's best interest to be paying far less for product fees, but with a suitability standard, there's nothing that requires the advisor to sell it.
The embedded fees question is a very, very hot potato politically. How would you characterize your conversations with investment industry people?
You know, it's very interesting, and I realize that the advocates have a lot at stake, but I would say that their arguments are paternalistic. You know, for example, one of the ones that we heard is, well, you know, we really don't want people to know how much they're paying for advice because if they realized how much they were paying, they wouldn't pay it. And we know that people do much better when they actually get financial advice. To me, that's frankly a ludicrous argument. I don't know how someone can say that with a straight face. The reality is if you can't sell your services with the client knowing full well what they're paying, then the problem isn't with the business model. The problem is with the value proposition. Mm. You don't have enough value there.
And there are a couple of markets in the world, the UK being the most notable, where embedded fees were eliminated. And there were a number of consequences intended and otherwise, but a lot of advisors left the industry, and there were people who were left with, if not no ability or a tougher time getting financial advice.
Your point is absolutely valid. In the UK, when embedded fees were eliminated, we saw the number of advisors there go from 40,000 to 31,000. So, no wonder that the lobby groups are opposing this, because who wants to see a 25% reduction in their revenues? But what we have to do, first and foremost, is look at what's in the best interest of the client. And when people know the fees that they're paying, that's ideal. Then they can manage. Then they can make the best investment decisions. And I also really don't buy the line about there being an investment gap, this idea of a financial advice gap that right now, it implies that right now everybody who wants it has access to a financial advisor, but if this happened sometime in the future, people wouldn't. The reality is just not that simple. Right now, there are many people who don't have access to a financial advisor, and I think it also really overlooks the rise of financial technology, fintech or robo-advising, where people can get access to quality advice. I would liken it to, you know, rather than having a catered meal, they can order off a menu. For many people, it makes much more sense to order something off a menu at a much cheaper price than pay for some catered specific meal or array of investments.
You mentioned a bunch of the other options out there, robo funds or robo advisors, exchange traded funds or low fee mutual funds. Why doesn't CARP put its energy on improving the awareness and adoption of those options that already exist?
Well, we are first and foremost an advocacy organization. So our work is to try to change the system and make that work better for our members. But we do have a secondary role as an educator. So we're provided some information. I'd love to share one of our resources, which is called the Top Investor Traps, where we really do talk about the issues with some of the financial products that are out there, and people can download it on our site, carp.ca/resources. We are also happy to work with industry partners. We've, had a number who have used our sister organization, Zoomer Media, to advertise and to promote awareness of their products. I think that's great.
Mm. The third data point that I want to bring up from your survey, 89% agree or strongly agree that regulating titles used by people selling investments to the public would help make investors more informed investment decisions. Duh. Of course, I'm not surprised by this one. Why do you think it's taking so long?
You know, it's no surprise that it's taking so long because we are really threatening the financial industry here. We've got, a number of individuals and their firms whose employment, whose business model is based on presenting themselves as having some expertise that they really don't. One of the areas where we've seen a lot of pushback is in our call to have people that are simply salespeople identified as such. And I think that will go a long way. You know, if you think about somebody walking onto a car dealership, you don't expect the Ford dealer to give you, the best deal of any car in the country. They're going to talk to you about the best Ford for your needs. And that makes sense. That's why they're a Ford salesperson. So I think it's very legitimate for there to be, salespeople for different financial institutions. But when you go to a financial advisor, that individual should be able to look at sort of the universe of products available and recommend what's truly in your best interest.
Right. I'm in my 40s, and one day, someday, I'm going to be in your target group, God willing. But I don't want to think about it. How do you get the younger generations engaged in something that won't be clearly relevant to them for a while? 55? What is that 55? That seems awfully young.
Well, first of all, let me just say that you could join CARP even now and take advantage of all our great benefits as well as supporting the advocacy that we do. The other thing that is...
Is there a discount on Grecian formula and hair coloring for men? Could I get a discount on that? No, that's probably an ageist comment that I just made right there. How terrible.
At least you have hair.
I do. Hooray for me.
I think that, one of the things that I really love about working with our cohort is that so much of the work they do is not for themselves, but for others. We were a huge voice in terms of introducing the changes to the Canada Pension Plan and fought very hard before that for the Ontario Pension Plan. And our members weren't going to benefit from that. They were just looking at their own situations and saying, no future seniors should be in this situation. They should have more, more choices, more financial security than we had. So I think, anything that our members do, they're looking, not only for how does it serve themselves, but also how will this serve my children and grandchildren.
Well, Wanda, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Before I go, I just want to give a shout out to our investor protection campaign, because what we know is squeaky wheels get the grease. If your listeners could log on to carp.ca, protect my savings, and add their voices calling for a best interest standard, the elimination of embedded fees, and regulation of titles.
Thank you for that plug. Wanda Morris, Vice President of Advocacy for CARP. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up later on Moolala, you've been hearing lots about discount brokers and robo-advisors, but how do you actually get started? We'll give you a step-by-step tutorial. But up next, a legal will for under 40 bucks. If you're one of the millions of people who do not have an up-to-date will, don't move a muscle. Your future beneficiaries are begging you to take action, and you can't say price was a barrier anymore. Follow me at Bruce Selry on Twitter, Bruce Selry on Facebook. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Selry on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Half of Canadians do not have an up-to-date will. Half. No matter how much or how little money you have, and no matter when you die, whomever is left behind is going to have to sort out your estate. And yet half of Canadians don't have a will. To make the case for a simple and inexpensive option, Tim Hewson is with us. He is one of the founders of LegalWills.ca. Hello there, Tim.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
How much is a DIY will on your platform, and how does it work?
So our will service costs $39.95. You would go online. You would step through a series of questions, answering questions about your your family situation, your key appointments like your guardians, your executor, the distribution of your estate, including charitable bequests and things like that. And then you download and print your document. At the end, it's compiled on the fly, and then you sign it in the presence of two witnesses, and you have your legal will. You don't have to do it all in one sitting. You can return at any time within the first year and update it as many times as you want to get it just the way you want it.
You have a vested interest in the answer to this next question. Who needs a will?
Every adult needs a will.
I agree with you. Why do you say that?
Because it depends on your family situation. If you have young children, you need to name a guardian for your children. So that you definitely need a will. If you live in any kind of non-traditional family environment, like a common law relationship, you have a second spouse who's not the parent of your children, you definitely need a will. If you don't have any family members, you definitely need a will to determine who's going to receive what. And even if you live in a traditional spouse with children, you need a will just because it makes things simpler. Also, it allows you to do things like name charitable bequests. It just gives you control over what's going to happen to everything once you've gone. If you don't have a will, everybody just looks at each other and wonders what they're supposed to do.
What are some things that people don't think about that your process prompts them to think about? So we know, you know, we need to think about our financial assets, but what are some things that might not be top of mind?
I think one of the key benefits of our service is it covers the what-if scenarios. So a lot of people say, it's simple, it's all going to go to my spouse, what do I need to worry about? Well, what happens if you're both involved in an accident at the same time, or one predeceases the other one? So we'd cover a lot of alternate scenarios to make sure that no matter what happens in your life and what happens in your family's life, your will is going to work. And that includes not only just your appointments, you're going to name an executor, but you have to name an alternate executor. You have to have an alternate distribution plan. You have to name alternate guardians just in case your first choice is no longer the right person at the time, because your will doesn't come into effect today, hopefully. It's going to come into effect sometime in the future. So we make sure every eventuality is covered. Mm.
How does the will need to line up with other things like your life insurance policy or your benefits at work? How do those things need to sort of talk to each other?
Well, if you have a registered financial plan or a life insurance policy, typically they have beneficiaries named on them. So they wouldn't even form part of your estate that's covered in your will. So it's an interesting point. Like if you said, I'm going to leave the proceeds of my life insurance policy to my eldest child and everything else to my second child, but your life insurance policy already has a beneficiary named on it, then your eldest child's not going to receive anything. So you have to make sure your beneficiary designations of the policies line up with the distribution plan for your estate. So don't include something that has a beneficiary already named as one of the assets in your estate, particularly if you're trying to equalize things across your different beneficiaries.
How often does one need to update their will?
This is an interesting question, because I think traditionally people have thought of wills as expensive, inconvenient processes. So they try and do it once in a lifetime. So people have thought, well, we're going to have a kid next year, so maybe we'll hold off with the will. But nowadays, if you use services like ours, you can update it at any time, and you can be more nuanced about the update. So supposing you've named an alternate executor, and that person is taken ill. So this has nothing to do with your own personal situation, your financial situation. It's somebody that's named in your will, even as a secondary, they're no longer the best choice. Traditionally, you might have thought, I can't really be bothered to go through the process of updating the will. But now with online interactive tools, you can just log into your account. You can make the change, download an updated will. So it's always up to date. So whenever a circumstance changes for you or for anybody named in your will, it's a good time to update.
I just updated my will, and I was like, I didn't even remember half of the stuff that was in there. So I would need, I think, a time-bound prompt, like, should it be every year? Should it be every 2 years?
Certainly, yes. Yeah. So we recommend at least once a year on an annual basis, you take a look and make sure it still reflects your wishes. So over and above circumstantial changes, yes, once a year you should be taking a look. And usually once a year, something may change. Your children may become adults. You may have another child or another grandchild. Your children may have separated from their spouse. So there's things happen through your life. And so once a year is a good time to take a look.
What are some of the regional nuances that Canadians might not be aware of? Because there are different things happening in different parts of this country that can affect how wills are constructed and executed, like executor requirements and things like that.
Yeah, there aren't a ton of differences. There's a lot of differences surrounding what happens if you die without a will. That's one of the major differences in different provinces. The distribution plan, so what happens is your provincial courts determine who's going to receive what. They are quite significantly different from province to province. There are also significant provincial differences between other documents like a financial power of attorney or a living will or a healthcare power of attorney or things like that. They are quite dramatically different from province to province. But the wills, other than the age at which you can write a will, it varies slightly from province to province. And I'm taking Quebec aside. Quebec is completely different to the rest of Canada. But aside from Quebec, there's quite a strong overlap, and there aren't too many individual provincial differences.
When does it simply make more sense to hire a lawyer to pay the whatever $1,000, $1,500 instead of a do-it-yourself option like you offer?
If you need legal advice, and particularly things for a child with special needs, and you need a trust set up to make sure that they can receive an inheritance without it affecting any of their government subsidies and things like that, there are certain circumstances where you need somebody with legal background to give you legal advice. One thing we don't handle very well is a conditional bequest. Like, I want it all to go to this person. If they do this and if that doesn't happen, then I want this. So some conditional bequests that require specially crafted legal clauses, you need to speak to a lawyer. But for the vast majority of people who know what they want to happen to their estate, it probably isn't necessary.
Why do you think so many people don't have a will? Is it in large part because you have to confront your own mortality by actually signing the document?
I don't think it's that. No, I think that traditionally the process has been inconvenient. It's expensive, so people only want to do it once, maybe twice in their lifetime. Booking an appointment to go and see a lawyer, particularly if you want to coordinate it with your spouse, is an inconvenient process. So it will never really make it to the top of your to-do list. Particularly, you know, one of the people that we say absolutely should have a will is people who have new children, like they need to name a guardian for their children. Taking your family with young children down to see a lawyer, knowing that that will may be out of date shortly thereafter, makes the process inconvenient and is expensive. So I think people tend to put it on the back burner. Mm.
You do all that work, you pay your $40, you print it out. Where does the will also live in your universe on your site in case something happens to the paper copy?
No. The only wills that will be accepted by a court, it has to be printed on a piece of paper and then signed in the presence of two witnesses, and it has to be the originally signed document. So any faxed, scanned, digitized, uploaded documents are generally not accepted. There are special circumstances where they would be, but generally speaking, you need a paper copy, an originally signed document to be your will. We allow you to maintain an account with us so you can update it, but every time you make an update, it has to be downloaded, printed, and signed in the presence of two witnesses each time.
Interesting. Well, Tim, thank you very much for your insight, and hopefully our conversation will be a catalyst for people to get their butts in gear, regardless of whether or not they do it with you or with a lawyer. I don't care how they do it. I just want them to do it. Am I right?
You are. And can I just say one additional thing? That I think that people have traditionally been scared of do-it-yourself will kits. And I agree that do-it-yourself will kits, like a blank form kit that you can buy, have quite rightly been widely condemned. So online interactive services are nothing like a blank form will right. kit. So there's do-it-yourself and there's doing it yourself with an online service like ours. They're two right. completely different
right.
things.
I understand. Thank you very much. Take care, Tim.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Coming up next, stop procrastinating. If you've been thinking about setting up a robo-advisor account, you will have no excuse after our next interview. We'll take you through all the steps. And later, Shemez Kassam, the author of Your Money's Worth, The Essential Guide to Financial Advice for Canadians. You can pick up either of my books at your local library. That's an option. You can also order either of them online. The first is called Moolala, Why Smart People Do Dumb Things with Their Money and What You Can Do About It.
Listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
You've been hearing about robo-advisors and discount brokers for a while now, but how do you get started? This is one of the questions that I get asked all the time. So on Ask Anything today, our segment where we take your listener questions, that is what we're going to focus on answering. Edward Kolodenko is the CEO of Questrade, and he's here with a little bit of a tutorial. Hello.
Hi, Bruce.
Let's start with the terms. What is a discount broker and what's a robo-advisor for those who are not steeped in the language of this?
So a discount broker is a little bit of a misnomer. The new moniker, I guess, is online broker. And what that is it's a service for someone who wants to manage their own money. So basically, they go onto the broker website. In our case, it would be Questrade.com. They would fill out a new account application and they would follow the instructions that were there and fund their account and get started.
And so a robo-advisor? You're going to tell me there's another word for that too, aren't you?
Digital advice.
See, I told you.
It's and not what's robots. That? They're real people in behind the service. And so we like to call it digital advice in that you do get started online, much the same way where you go online, you fill out a series of questions, except the questions are a little bit more detailed. They ask about your risk tolerance. And depending on your risk tolerance, it would put you into a portfolio that is appropriate for you. And at that point, you would fund the account, and the account would be professionally managed and invested according to your risk tolerance.
How does an investor choose between those two ideas?
Well, it all depends on the investor themselves and their tolerance. We have many, many clients who choose to put a portion in an online investment account and into a professionally managed digital account, digital investment account, where it's professionally managed. And so it really depends on the investor. And it could be different percentages for each. But if someone feels that they've got the time and the capability to manage their own finances, they would choose the online brokerage account. If someone would like someone else to manage the account for them and their finances, they would choose the digital advice, the robo-advisor.
Right. Thank you for including that. I was going to wrap that in. Can't change the terminology all at once on me here. How does the – I'm using my terms because I'm in the interviewer chair. How does a robo-advisor determine what my money should be invested in? So, yes, there's a know-your-client piece. I'm talking to the agent or whatever. There's a brief conversation with a live human being. Hooray. But after that, how does it – say I'm saving for my daughter's RESP. How do they determine how much of the money that I have contributed to an RESP goes into equities versus fixed income and what kind of equities?
So the first thing that happens – and this is exclusive to Questrade and perhaps one other broker today, is that you can actually go through the entire process online. There is not a need to have a conversation with a human, although that is available for anyone who needs it. You can pick up the phone and call a professional portfolio manager at any time. But we do provide a service that is completely seamless and online for the client. Now, how does the service determine which portfolio to put you into? Depends on the answers to your questions for your risk tolerance. And depending on your risk tolerance, there are a series of ETF portfolios that are weighted towards different kinds of risks. And so some have more equities and others may have more fixed income in them. And depending on your risk tolerance and your answers to those questions, you will be put into one of those investments.
What happens if my circumstances change? So if I had a regular, even if it was an annual meeting with a real live financial advisor, we would have an opportunity to yak about my life and I'd be able to tell them this happened, that happened. How does this work within a robo context?
So at Questrade, we actually send you an email to remind you that you need to go onto our website at least annually and update your circumstances. And if your circumstances have changed, you may have to go through the questionnaire again so that we can determine your new risk tolerance. And depending on your new risk tolerance, then we would put you into the appropriate portfolio.
So I've got to respond to that email prompt and make sure that they're up to date.
And of course, you can always log in at any time and update it yourself.
One of the benefits of a live human breathing advisor is to soothe an investor's frayed nerves during a market decline. Do you have a pre-recorded message from Deepak Chopra underscored with Chopin?
Well, actually, we have our own professional advisors, and we definitely communicate.
Do they have soothing voices? Relax. It's going to be okay. Maybe not Chopin. Maybe Zamfir Magic of the Pan Flute would be a better soundtrack.
Well, we have our own tune that we play. And so the tune is distinctly Questrade, but certainly we do communicate very actively.
But if it's a digital advisor, if it's a robo-advisor and markets are down 30%, what communication should I expect to receive from you? You can't call all your clients and talk to them.
Certainly, they would receive an email or a newsletter, some sort of update to inform investors what it is, what is going on in the markets and what we're doing.
When you talk to people about their fears and the hurdles that they face in signing up for this kind of a service, what is the single biggest piece of advice you can offer them to move through that fear? Because for a lot of people, it's simply just the aversion to change. So they've been doing things however they've been doing them for decades, and your method and those of your competitors in this space represent a change to that. What advice do you have for them?
Well, it's a huge change, and I think people should really ask their advisors, if they have one, really, really tough questions. Ask them, why is it that they're paying so much in fees? Take a look. Go on to Questrade.com and go through the calculator and figure out what it is they would retire with after a set amount of time. You can put all these variables in. But the other thing that I would suggest is that they really look into the total returns, not only the total returns of their current portfolio, but the total returns and the investment history of the proposed portfolios of the robo-advisors. And at Questrade, I could say that we are very, very proud to publish those on our website. And we've outperformed the benchmark. And we have that all on our website for the last 5 years. And the thing that makes our portfolios much different is that they're actively managed, meaning that our managers adapt to the macro view of what's going on in the world. So if there is a view that things are not going to do so well, well, the portfolio will get adjusted to
Are you overweight or underweight the U.S. right now?
Well, it depends on which portfolio, but certainly these are ETFs. So inside a portfolio of ETFs, it is very, very widely diversified.
I just mean if you account for macroeconomic conditions, you would include valuation in that. The U.S. is at all-time highs. So I'm just wondering if those portfolio managers are saying, oh, we need to reduce the U.S. a little bit. Or they're saying, hooray, this is the beginning of our next bull.
Again, I don't really want to comment on specific portfolios because I am not managing those myself.
Right.
But that is something that the managers certainly adjust for.
All right. Edward, thank you for your time today.
Pleasure. Thank
Appreciate
you, Bruce.
It. Edward Kolodenko is the CEO of Questrade. Coming up next, Shemez Kassam, Your Money's Worth, The Essential Guide to Financial Advice for Canadians, a different take on how to get a handle on your money. Plus, Wanda Morris of CARP will answer the Moolah La questionnaire. Subscribe to the podcast version of this show on iTunes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Shemez Kassam is the author of Your Money's Worth, The Essential Guide to Financial Advice for Canadians. He has an MBA, the CFA designation, and he works as a financial advisor. He joins us now from Calgary, Alberta. Hello there.
Good afternoon, Bruce. How are you?
What was missing? Why did you decide to write this book? It's a lot of work. Books are hard.
It is a lot of work, and you know, I just really felt there was a need for this book. And I've had a wide range of experience in the financial industry. I've worked with some of the largest institutional investors in the world. I've worked with individual investors since about 2009, and it was really when I started to work with individual investors, I noticed there was a large knowledge gap and there were patterns of mistakes that I found individual investors making. And these mistakes I felt were entirely preventable with the right knowledge. And that frustrated me. And that's what really prompted me to write this book.
There's a lot of discussion about the value of financial advice, especially given how hard it is for active managers to meet the index. How do you think an advisor can add value? You wrote in your book about a whole bunch of options. I think many of them are worth talking about here.
Sure. And one of the things that I think is unique about my book is that I really give a simple overview of the financial advice industry in Canada, because our industry, from a consumer's perspective, I think it is quite confusing because there are so many different types of advisor platforms, different types of advice, different licensing that you know some advisors have. Some might be licensed only to deal with insurance products. Some might be to deal, you know.
So, what would be some examples of how an advisor can add value?
Yes, and in the book, I talk about the advice wheel, and for me, it's really about making sure that every room in your financial house is in order, right? And the investments is one room, but there's also things that are very important, like insurance. Do you have adequate life insurance and also disability insurance to protect your family? Do you have an estate plan? I think the most recent stats I saw are about 50% of Canadians don't have a will.
Yeah. You also mentioned behavior coaching. What do you mean by that?
That is really about making sure that that investors do not do the exact wrong thing at the wrong time. And that is really one of the key components of where an advisor can add value. Mm. And one example of that would be in the most recent financial crisis that we went through. You know, there are lots of stories around of investors that that panicked in February or March of 2009 at mm-hmm. low, just because they could not take the pain anymore. And I think as humans, we are very wired towards two emotions, which are fear and greed. And to be a successful investor, you really need to manage those. And sometimes that's where a third-party advisor mm-hmm. can really assist.
Fear, greed, and chocolate would be a third one. I would add chocolate in there. Now, there's a huge spectrum in terms of what Canadians can expect from their advisor, in part because of the way the comp system works, in part because of the firm that they happen to work at, and in part because of the temperament and skills that that advisor has. How do you address that?
Well, the first thing is really that the consumer needs to know what they're looking for, and then they need to know what the right questions to ask. And that's why I've included some really practical worksheets in my book where consumers can assess their needs, and when they go to interview several advisors and then pick one eventually, they can really assess those advisors. And my thought has always been that financial advice is only as good as a person giving it, and so you really need to dig in to exactly what your advisor's experience is, what their qualifications are, and whether they have really managed through multiple market cycles.
I like the list of questions, though I think there was one that was missing. And I don't know what the question is, but I know what the attribute is. It's something that you might call, if you're talking about a doctor, bedside manner. What are some of the qualitative questions that you could ask? Because the questions that you asked are very credentials and approach and all that stuff. But for a lot of investors, they need to feel like they're having a relationship with someone who can think holistically and communicate well. How would you get at that in your search for an advisor fit?
There's two ways, Bruce. One is, I think, to really probe into the service model that particular advisor has. And you can find out how often you can expect to hear from the advisor, what their communication strategy is with their clients, and that type of thing. And then to really dig into that, one of the things I suggest is that you speak to two or three of that advisor's clients just as a reference check.
Right.
And you can really find out from those clients.
What's the investor's responsibility in this relationship? You write about it extensively. What do you think it is?
From my perspective, for the investor and the advisor both to get the most out of the relationship, it really has to be a two-way street. And from the investor's perspective, I think it is very important to be an active participant in the relationship and be engaged in it, right? So, you know, when you go to meetings, take notes, make sure that you're staying on top of things that, you know, that you need to follow up on, and be proactive with your advisor when something significant in your life changes. If you have a life-changing event, then let the advisor know. And one other thing I think is really important is for couples, it's really important that both members of a couple are reasonably informed about their financial situation. Mm-hmm. And I've found that oftentimes one person takes the lead, which is okay, but the other person should have a reasonable level of knowledge about what's going on.
Right.
Because if one of them passes away, that can be very challenging in a lot of ways.
Shemez, I'm afraid that's all the time we have, but I really appreciate you giving us some of yours to talk about your book. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Shemez Kassam is the author of Your Money's Worth, The Essential Guide to Financial Advice for Canadians. The Moolala Questionnaire. It's a series of questions about money and a little bit about life. Wanda Morris is our guest. She's VP Advocacy with CARP. Wanda, just the first thing that comes to your mind. Are you ready?
Ready. I'm ready.
How would you describe your money personality?
I'm frugal and I'm conservative.
Ooh, and where do you think that comes from?
Well, I am used to be called a chartered accountant, now a CPA. So that's one thing. Also, I grew up without a lot of money, so I know how much of a difference a few dollars can make.
What's the one money topic you could talk about all day, every day?
Oh, my goodness. That's a hard one, but maybe debt. I hate to see people overspending, consumer spending, going into debt for consumer products. Just the levels of debt that people take on drives me crazy.
What is one of your guilty spending pleasures? Surely you have one. I know you're frugal, so it could be on, like, I don't know, extra strength Ziploc bags that you can reuse 25 times.
Well, I love to really splash out on really inexpensive things. So, for example, you know, buying a really lovely pair of socks, for example, rather than spending money on an expensive pair of shoes or a handbag that would cost hundreds, I could get a beautiful pair of socks for $10.
Wow.
You have quite a book budget.
Right, of course. Well, that's kind of like bread and water. It's a necessity of life, books, of course. Now, when do you plan to retire and what will you do?
Well, I'm in a really fortunate situation that I could retire right now, but fortunately, I love my work. So I don't have any plans to do so. What I think would be ideal is if I could work perhaps part-time, part-year, but at the moment I have no plans to cut back.
If you could snap your fingers and change one financial behavior in society at large, what would it be?
Yeah, I think I already talked about this. This is this idea of people spending money. Whenever I hear someone say, but you deserve it, it really frustrates me, because that's a type of self-talk that will get people into debt and into a really bad financial situation. It's not about what you deserve. It's about what you can afford. Mm.
What is your number one personal finance tip for those who are beginning the traditional, I'm using air quotes here, the traditional phase of retirement?
Ooh.
Number one tip?
I just went the first thing off the top of my head. I guess I would say go slow and steady. Mm. It's a lot harder to recover than it is to splurge later. So take it easy and, I guess a little bit of caution.
What is the greatest form of misery?
We're talking financial or just any kind?
However you interpret the question.
Oh, well, I think for me, it would be going into a crowded room of people that I didn't know and having to talk.
Wow. And what's the greatest form of happiness?
I love bike riding. So bike riding on a holiday in a wonderful location with my husband, looking forward to perhaps a great meal at the end of the day. That's hard to beat.
Well, you've got the region for it, hanging out as you do in British Columbia. Thank you very much for your time today, Wanda. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks again for having me.
Wanda Morris is with CARP. That is our program for today. Thank you for joining us. To listen to past episodes, head on over to iTunes. You can even subscribe so that your next episode will just magically arrive on your phone, your iPad, your computer. Please send us your questions, your comments, your insights, whatever it is, to ask at moolala.ca. At Bruce Selry on Twitter, Facebook is Bruce Selry Moolala. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.